Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
And good morning. I'm Mike Diller with you, and joining me in the studio, glad to have these guys back with us. Larry Sheffield, film producer, produced the movie Oppenheimer, or the documentary Oppenheimer After Trinity. And also Trent DiGilio, he's the director, and got both of them in here. So good morning, Larry.
Good morning. How are you? Well, good to see you again.
Thank you very much. I always say I'm mean and ornery and having a good time. A friend of church told me you're raising hell trying to get to heaven. I said, yeah. That's right. And Trent DiGilio also.
Thank you.
Good to have you here, Trent. And you're the director of the film.
Yes, sir.
I tell you what. Now, you guys did one a few years back.
Yes.
And I had the pleasure. My wife and I came and saw that, and we were fascinated.
I'm sure thrilled that you came. I hope you enjoyed it. We're doing a trilogy, and so the first one was Alamogordo, Center of the World, Trinity in 1945. It was a little 30-minute film that connects Alamogordo to how a Trinity site was found and you know, what was the Alamogordo connection.
Mm-hmm.
And primarily we got something out of an obituary of David Harris, who was the son of the founders of Alamogordo, their lawyer, Mr. Hawkins. He had a son named David. So we kind of make that connection. But now we've talked about the bomb. Now the second one is 58 minutes, and it's a film about the key character of the whole movement, and that is Dr. Robert Oppenheimer, because we can tell the story about the Manhattan Project, but he really is the guy that is pivotal in everything. So it's easy to kind of talk about him and try to get into his mind. And we kind of do this at a 50,000 foot level, where we just don't talk about things locally, but we talk about the things that are going on globally.
Right.
And so the decisions that President Truman's having to make, and how that trickles down to the Trinity test. And so this film has... We've had 8 shows so far. Every single one has been sold out to capacity. We showed it 4 times in Los Alamos, and they asked if we could provide more showings, and we just agreed to show 8 more shows up there.
Wow.
And that's a town of 14,000 people, so imagine that. The theater holds about 110. So it's like, I think half the town's probably going to end up seeing the film. And they're our most critical audience, because they're the scientists that really know this subject. So I was just going to say, we have also been very blessed to have won 10 film festival awards.
Wow.
And we've won several awards outside of the U.S. We've had France,
Singapore,
Italy, and Singapore give us film festival awards that we weren't expecting. So this film is really resonating around the world and around the country.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, Trent, you got involved with this guy clear back at Alamogordo High School, and because you're both graduates of Alamogordo High School. Yeah,
right.
And I'm not, so I came from out of state. And but directing this film, what were some of the challenges to directing this film?
Well, I think it's the massive amount of data that Larry collected. It's an incredible amount of media and processing and development phases that we went through in the production and developing everything and putting it all together. Yeah. I have to really always kick it back and compliment Larry on it, because the writing that he did, the organization and the structure and acquisition of the materials, that is such a deep dive into really organizing it in a fashion that tells the story.
Right.
My part is really more of the visual acuity of the whole thing and bringing it together and tying those elements together. But it was truly collaborative.
Oh, yeah.
We did not, you know, really, though, I'm going back to the collaborative part is when we're in the hardcore production.
Yeah.
When we're at the studios in Dallas and all those elements with our editors are coming together and we're sticking those things together. It's been a real interesting challenge on different levels, sure. too.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, Lori, you brainchild behind this thing, and I'm guessing both of you history buffs.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, yes. And you can't grow up in, near Holloman Air Force Base and White Sands Missile Range and not have it rub off on you, because it's our main employment base here in Otero County. And of course, you know, Trent and I went to school with all the kids whose parents worked out on the base, whether it was the air base or the Army base, and you know, we heard all the stories and all the folklore, and this valley is full of folklore stories about the military mission that started in 1945.
Right.
And what this second film is going to show folks is, and this is an interesting fact, and I don't want to spoil the film, but even before the bomb had been tested at Trinity site, the decision was made by the Pentagon. Because Germany had fallen, you know, May 1st, and the test wasn't until July.
Right.
But between May and June, we discovered, you know, all this V2 technology that was aimed at the U.S. Through a rocket that they were developing called the V9, the Vengeance 9, and basically. We decided to get that technology as fast as we could and get it out of Germany. And, of course, that's what our next film's about. But they ended up saying, where do we put all this stuff? And they sent it to the same White Sands Proving Ground where the bomb was about to be tested.
Yeah.
So this stuff, we were already preparing for building a proving ground before the atomic test ever happened. So it's really an interesting story when you look at the chronological order of things, but there's just so much history in this story, and it's right here in Alamogordo, between Alamogordo and Las Cruces. And my goal was to do these three films to really visually tell the story, because all this film is in 1,000 pieces. And you'll see a clip in one movie, or you'll hear a quote in one book, or you'll listen to some audio, but no one's put the story together from our perspective. When I say our perspective, Southern New Mexico. And so that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to preserve history, and we're trying to tell a really compelling and interesting story, and let future generations kind of know how this all kind of happened.
Yeah. You know, I've always found it fascinating how we tie Alamogordo to this thing, largely because it was developed up in Los Alamos, but it was tested up north and west of Carrizozo at Trinity site. It's still a pretty good distance from Alamogordo, but I think when you look at the logistics of everything, Alamogordo's pretty close. But really, Alamogordo wasn't really that involved in the development and testing of the bomb, was it?
That's correct. So the reason Alamogordo is probably given credit, you know, San Antonio, New Mexico is closer. Socorro was actually closer. So, you know, but when you hear the atomic bomb, in fact, we have some footage tonight where President Truman talks about Alamogordo, New Mexico. He actually says the word Alamogordo, New Mexico.
That was
so
exciting. Yeah.
What's interesting is, you know, the Alamogordo Army bombing range had already been set into motion and was being used in World War II. So our role at Alamogordo was to provide, manpower for testing bombs, dropping bombs.
Yeah.
And when we already had the range, and of course Oppenheimer and David Hawkins were good friends, and David Hawkins had driven around and said, "Hey, I know this perfect place where, I mean, it's like the edge of the earth. No one goes there." And that was on the edge of the bombing range, the Alamogordo Air Bombing Range. So I think we get a lot of credit because of the name of the Alamogordo Army Bombing Range.
Yeah.
But it didn't end there. We were providing support for Trinity site. The commander gave us accurate aerial surveys. All the dignitaries that were here to witness the bomb flew into the Alamogordo Army Air Base to go witness it. And even the air crews that were going to fly on the morning of the bomb test were out of Alamogordo. So it was a support to Trinity site.
Yeah. And I think what a lot of I discovered it accidentally when I came down here and I was working for Coca-Cola. I discovered that where Holloman Air Force Base is now is not where it was at that time. It was way up north, Alamogordo Bombing Field or Airfield or whatever it was called back then. And as I'm driving around taking care of some stuff, and I had to go out there, long drive, had to go out there, and there's the signage and everything. And that was where Holloman Air Force Base, prior to its existence, was actually located, was a lot closer to Trinity site than what a lot of people realize.
Right.
The air base is actually north and east.
Yes.
Of straight north of where Holloman Air Force Base is now.
Well, and I'll tell you a tidbit. In our research, you know, we found out that the B-29s had just been delivered, you know, the brand new military B-29, and it was could fly longer, higher, and have more, hold more fuel. And you know, they were the first few models were they hadn't really started mass producing them, but Alamogordo got some of the very first ones.
Yeah.
And we actually have a gentleman on tape that was a pilot flying at that time. He they were doing bomb testing runs that originated from Holloman Air Force. Well, it's Holloman now, but the Alamogordo Army Air Base.
Yeah.
And they would load up and see how far they could, and they would fly to the Pacific region.
Yeah.
From Alamogordo and get out so far and do a their mission and then come back.
Yeah.
So Alamogordo has more of a role than most people realize.
Wow. You know, Trent, I was listening to this and talking about the B-29. Little tidbit a lot of people don't know. Yeah, they were flying out of here. Back where I'm from, Great Bend, Kansas, has a huge, the airport is, and the Expo Air and the drag strip are all on a former B-29 landing spot.
Oh, that's cool.
My uncle was a mechanic on B-29s back in Great Bend, Kansas.
Oh, wow.
They would bring them from here and all over into Great Bend, Kansas.
Wow.
Flat, land them easy, work on them, and then send them back to where they came from.
Wow.
And stuff. So
yeah.
Who knows? He probably worked on some planes that actually flew out of here.
He probably did. And of course, after World War II, the major base in New Mexico for the B-29s was Roswell.
Yeah.
And they were the only atomic, their mission was atomic.
Yeah.
And they were the only one in the whole world that was trained to drop the atomic bombs. And so the base was built, as you mentioned, with long runways and built to do just the mission of housing the 509th Composite Air Group. And these were the B-29s that were all specially outfitted to hold, you know, a larger caricature of bomb. And it was the only nuclear base for, you know, for several years.
The one thing I got to try and get a hold of my cousins and see if I can get a copy of the picture. There's a copy of my uncle with the Enola Gay.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in Great Bend,
right.
Kansas.
That's
yeah.
So cool.
Yeah, I'll see if I can get that picture for you because I was blown away by it and stuff. So
it's amazing that aircraft is still up at the Smithsonian. Every time I go up there and see it, it's like, wow, it's right there.
Yeah, my uncle, when he's gone now, but when he first saw it up there at the Smithsonian, he almost got tears in his eyes. So, so
that's a whole story in itself.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the Enola Gay went from the Pacific Theater back to Roswell and was in Roswell for a bit, and then back out to the Pacific Theater where they were doing more testing, and then it was mothballed for a while,
right?
And then the government brought it out and it decided to get it in a museum, and it's a very interesting story just to talk about the Enola Gay.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it and stuff. So Trent, you just must be just like chomping at the bit putting all of this together. And I mean, I just, you know, your director's role in this thing just kind of just goes like this on me. You're just right over my head.
Well, there's a lot of technical aspects of what was integrated into the film and the things that we had to do from an editorial standpoint at the studios, and taking that footage and revamping it and adjusting the material and upgrading it, meaning, you know, digitizing it and using AI technology to increase the resolutions of material. The same with photography work. There was an intense amount of work that we did on almost every part of that film, or in fact, even the first film, the Alamogordo Trinity first one. And this second film involved a lot of interesting media corrections and fixes where we could see things that needed to be corrected so that we could have a picture that looked beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So we have some footage that very, very few people have seen. In fact, the story was, it was thrown, it came out of Los Alamos, and it was a film that was so shaky that it would make you lose your lunch just watching it. And I found out about it, and we were able to get a copy of it, and we took it and we slowed it down, and we trended, you know, about 10 different things. And you know, like, some of the scenes are dark, you can just see kind of figures of you know, men working, but we were able to lighten those up to now you can see it. And so what it is, We have some film footage of Trinity Base that tells the story of, you know, you see the pool table, you see the place where the mess hall, you see the barracks where the soldiers were staying, and none of this footage has really been out in the public purview. And you're going to see it tonight for the first time in Alamogordo at the Flickinger Center, 6 a.m. or 6 p.m. tonight. You're going to see that footage for the first time. It's very quick, but it's just crystal clear, and it tells a story that's really unusual.
Yeah.
It was amazing when we got that footage and we were looking at it, and it's as if this young cameraman, it was his first time throwing a camera. Right. Yeah. And so it's constantly moving around in very, very short moments of time. And so, as Larry was stating, we slowed that material down, but we also up-resed the material very, very high resolution, and then brought that in and shifted it up closer, and then color corrected everything and changed the speeds so that we could then have something that was tolerable to view, but yet complementary too. So it looks looks really good.
See, and I think a lot of people, well, at least not from this area, don't really understand that there was actually a base out there. A lot of people think that, well, they brought the bomb from Los Alamos and set it off.
Right.
You know,
right,
from the old McDonald farmhouse where they watched it from.
Right.
You know, but there was actually a whole military base there.
Yeah, and it was a real true base. I mean, there's a motor pool that you see, a cafeteria, pool table, an office where we have a guy at a typewriter and his shirt's off because, you know, it's probably hotter than you can imagine.
Yeah.
And just little tidbits of history that are, you know, once again, these tidbits would be sitting in the corner garnering dust, but we've been able to take it and manipulate it and put it in a film that people can see and learn something. And it a picture is worth a thousand words, as they say.
Yeah.
And these pictures tell a story.
Yeah.
Well, to be able to put it in a cohesive story, that's where the compliment goes to Larry, because it's such an intense amount of material coming from so many areas.
Yeah.
And then thinking that process through is critical, and so the storyline flows nicely.
Yeah.
Well, and the other, I have to say, the other part of the film that makes this film, I think, really compelling is we were able to bag the interview, as they say, and that is, we have Charles Oppenheimer, who's the grandson of Dr. Oppenheimer. We, you know, asked many times to try to get an interview, and I tried several times to contact him, and finally got a hold of him, and he said, you know, before I grant you an interview. I want to see your first film. So I sent it to him, and he liked it. And he said, why don't we go ahead and do an interview? So wow, we have the grandson of Dr. Oppenheimer on film, and we did an hour and a half interview, and it's a really interesting interview, and we're going to get it on a podcast, but there's only about 8 or 9 minutes on the film. But him talking about his grandfather and what he's learned through his family and just studying history, he has a really interesting perspective that it's very compelling. And I think that's a major part of this film and the attraction to, like, Los Alamos, as I mentioned earlier, and around the globe. He's got a perspective that the world wants to hear and needs to hear, and so that component is in our film. It's not just historic footage. We've got
right.
Several witnesses. In fact, we have 3 witnesses we talked to in the film, and so there's current day people talking about this subject, mm-hmm. and it makes the film very compelling.
Yeah,
I think we made about 13 trips around the state and elsewhere, even to San Francisco, which made it interesting for us to grab all of our gear and bringing all the film gear and landing and setting up for all of these different interviews as well as other production footage that we shot.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating because, you know, you would almost have to go across the country because the people that worked at Los Alamos at that time, they didn't stay there.
Right.
You know, they mm-hmm. got out of there. They True. Went to other places right. in the country and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so you got to hunt them down.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, I've only met one person that originally, he's I think he's in his late 90s, but he worked at the Manahan Project in Los Alamos and Trinity Base. And he's actually lives in Albuquerque and, does volunteer work, if you can believe this, at the National Nuclear Museum. But the people that we have in our film are the kids, you know, the either kids or grandkids. But they have very they have family stories, family folklore. I mean, you know, they remember as kids growing up, their parents talking about different things, and so it's not exactly firsthand, but it's a firsthand from the family, and right. so those stories, and a lot of these folks are in their 80s right now, mm-hmm. and so before they are no longer around to try to talk about these family folklore stories, you know, we need to get them on film to where they can talk, because they have their parents' generation didn't talk about anything. They their lips were sealed. We could have sat down and interviewed them, and they probably wouldn't have talked to us,
because
they were just that generation that didn't talk, mm-hmm. and they were trained that way. But the kids are more than willing to talk, because they at this point just want to tell their story.
Yeah.
So you get them sitting down, and they really start telling you know. The stories that happened in their families.
Yeah, fascinating. And I bet they had accumulated pictures and photographs
yes,
and artifacts.
Absolutely.
That helped lend credibility to it all.
Yes.
Right. Absolutely. And we would gather that material and digitize those images and bring them into the systems. Yeah.
Wow.
Definitely.
Now, you both are not in Alamogordo anymore.
I live in Phoenix.
You live in Phoenix.
Trent lives
in Dallas.
And you're in Dallas.
Yes, sir.
Boy, high school friends. Long distance, and you still get this done.
Probably the most humorous part is we met in the 7th grade in an art class,
uh-huh.
and we started talking, and we got in trouble, and we've talked ever since.
Yeah.
There you go, put in short order.
I love that. Yeah. I love
Mrs.
that.
Mrs. Lewis
yeah,
in her art class.
Yeah.
So I wanted to just say, without Zoom, we would not have been able to do this, because we have these daily grinding Zoom calls that if you can imagine editing a film over Zoom.
Oh, Lord.
And you really build 1 second at a time, and then 1 second becomes a minute, and you know, but it's a grinding process. We did most of it over Zoom, but we you know, still would get together every 2 or 3 weeks. I'd get
Larry
over to Trent.
In,
yeah, and we would, you know, perfect it. But a lot of the heavy lifting came through. Zoom calls.
Right.
Trent, I know how you feel because people tell me, well, 30-second commercial only takes you a minute or so to do. Now you got to write it, you got to produce it, you got to do all the other things to it, and everything that needs to be done. It takes about 10 minutes to do a 30-second commercial to get it on the air. You That's know, right. so I, you know, I can imagine
it's in our world, it's it could be a week, 2 weeks, depending on the complexity.
For a minute,
yes, for a commercial piece, yes.
Yeah,
that's
no
right.
doubt, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Well, folks, I tell you what, it's going to be fascinating tonight, 6 p.m. at the Flexinger Center for Performing Arts.
Yes,
Oppenheimer after Trinity. Tickets are $12, and they can get those tickets where?
Well, you can either buy them online, and I think there's a discount if you buy them online, or you can show up at the door and pay $12.
So they can get the tickets at FlickingerCenter.com?
Yes.
FlickingerCenter.com. Proceeds to anything, or just covering the cost?
We're covering the cost this time. So we always give a portion to charity, and we are actually working with Charles Oppenheimer on the Oppenheimer Foundation. And so far, the film has given $3,000. Just this film has given $3,000 to charitable organizations.
Wow.
We try to give some of it back.
Fantastic.
But we're also helping his organization.
Yeah.
So we always try to give back to the community.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Folks, tonight, 6 p.m. at the Flickinger Center for Performing Arts, go see it, Oppenheimer After Trinity. Tickets are $12 and get them at the door. You won't miss it out. Larry, always a pleasure to have you
Thank
in
you.
Here. I can't wait for the next one. And Trent, good to have you in here too.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well,
the next one,
you know, talks about the V-2 rocket that crashes in Alamogordo. And so it really has an Alamogordo tie.
Wow, that sounds great. Hey, this is going to be like the Lord of the Rings. You got
the
trilogy.
There you go.
And who knows, maybe more.
Maybe more. Yeah. That's what they did with Star Trek, set out to make 3.
Right.
Now they've got 15, I think. So fantastic. I tell you what, your information is vital to history that you guys have done here. It's vital to people to understand what went down, how it went down, and how it affected people. And it also shows a great country doing something necessary to stop madness within the world. I mean, what you guys are doing shows all of that, and it's fantastic what you're doing. I can't wait to see it.
Well, we're happy to show it, and thank you, Alamogordo, for having us.
Thank you very much.
We hope to see everyone at the Flickinger tonight.
There you go. It'll be a good time. Only tonight, though.
Tonight only.
Tonight only.
6 p.m.
Live, tonight only.
Yeah. There you go. Hey, that's good voicing.
Thank you.
Next time we'll get you in here, we'll cut a spot on this thing.
We'll cut some spots.
Sounds great. Larry Sheffield, Trent, I'm going to say this again, DiGiulio. DiGiulio, thank you. That's right.
Thank you.
I got a friend that he knows my last name, but he can't say it. He just calls me Drooler instead of Durler. So anyway, no problem. Guys, thank you so much for taking time out.
We appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You betcha.
Thank you.
Take care.
Go check it out tonight, Oppenheimer After Trinity at the Flickinger Center for Performing Arts.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.